Deputy Minister and Chair of the PIC. The CEO, I'm told you've got two heads. CEO, you've got another head of the commissioner of the National Planning Commission. I wanted to try to be what I cannot be, to remember all of you. Roy, am I right?
Yeah.
let me not go further than that. Because there is, I know in this kind of settings, you do have those who have got the responsibility to do this, to introduce the amongst others. Deputy Minister, more on a serious note, let me take this opportunity to welcome you and your team, Womyan. Thanks to see you in Parliament. The last time we saw you were in your offices. So you had a territorial advantage at the time. So you are here. First, let me also apologize for starting a bit late. We're almost 30 minutes behind time. Fortunately, you arrived in time, and also you allowed to participate as observers in the last presentation. So we are looking forward to have similar engagements, if not more robust engagement with yourselves in terms of your strategic plans. It is always refreshing to meet these institutions to understand where they are focusing and how do they think they would actually add value in terms of the national challenges that we have as a country. Thank you very much for coming. Over to you, Deputy Minister and Chair of the PIC. For now. Thank you, Honourable Deputy Minister. Over to you and your team.
Thank you, Chairperson of the Standing Committee on Finance. If this is how we're going to address it, I challenge. But I'm entirely in your hands, which title you want to use. But, Chair, I must indicate and apologize for having staged a walk-in. It was intended to indicate to the committee that we were punctual.
These days we'll charge you for punching.
For punctuality,
for
yes.
Punching.
Yes. Oh. thank you, Chairperson, and the committee. It is indeed a privilege for us to be before the Standing Committee on Finance in terms of the fulfillment of our obligations in terms of the founding legislation and all other statutory measures that regulate this entity, the Public Investment Corporation. Chair, mine is going to be an easy one because I will just introduce the Chief Executive and indicate what the corporate plan entails and allow the Chief Executive to do the rest. In introducing the team, allow me to only introduce the board members, the non-executive board members, and I will leave the Chief Executive to introduce the rest, including Roy. and apologize on behalf, as you would know, Chairperson, tradition and convention is that we would bring in the chairpersons of the committees, of the subcommittees from the non-executive. Unfortunately, Mr. Sehule, who is chairman of the Audit and Risk Committee, as well as the recently formed Social and Ethics Committee, has taken ill and had a minor procedure, so was unable to attend. Also, Mr. Sithole, who unfortunately had prior commitments which could not also be rescheduled in line with his duties as a member of this committee. We also have Mr. Stradom, Mr. Jan Stradom, who is non-executive director and chairman of our investment committee. Mr. Stradom, please show my... And then the chief executive, who is known to you, who is then going to take over now. But let me also take the opportunity to indicate to you, you'll also apologize for the absence of our chief investment officer, Mr. Dan Majila, who is also executing his duties outside of the country and could not be with us today. Our presentation, Chairperson, will focus on the following areas. We will introduce the key objectives of the PIC and our 10-year strategy as part of the offsetting the scene for our corporate plan. We'll give you the summary of the corporate plan for the next 3 years, and then we will give you a breakdown of our clients and assets under management, unaudited, as at the 31st of March 2012. And then we will take you through our developmental investments. We'll also walk you through our Africa strategy, then look at the financial key financial features, and conclude and take questions. As I take it that members have also gone through the corporate plan. And as honourable members will notice that the 3-year strategic plan document tabled in Parliament does not focus in detail on the developmental investments and the Africa strategy at this point. The reason, Chairperson, being that there were a lot of discussions between ourselves and the GEPF that were not finalised by the time of the tabling of the corporate plan. And as these two initiatives are key focus areas of the PIC in the coming years, we thought it appropriate to share the initial plans with yourselves. In detail will be provided once finality is reached and the relevant structures and all required approvals have also been obtained. We hope to have a detailed discussion with the committee on these matters during our presentation after the tabling of our annual report later in the year. Chairperson, without wasting time and respecting the fact that we are chasing the minutes behind, I'm going to allow the chief executive officer to walk us through the shareholders or the corporate plan. Chief executive.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll start off by introducing the team. To my far right is Dion Botha. Immediate left is Sekhwela Sekhwela. He's responsible for our communication. Then it's Leon Smith, who's responsible for fixed income investments. Then it's Petro Dekker, who is the COO of the PIC. Then it is Mats Heppel, who is the Chief Financial Officer. Roy has been introduced by the Chair. He is responsible for developmental investing, which is Isibaya, the Isibaya vehicle. Next to him is Koketso Mabe, who is also Isibaya, who is going to be responsible for driving the Africa investment. And as the Deputy Minister has indicated that the CIO is not with us today for reasons relating to our Africa strategy. He's currently crawling the continent to try and find new investments. Chair, we decided to start at a point which is not in the documents that you were given, which is the plan. We decided to start at the level of a very high level and long-term thinking, thinking about where this institution should be in the next 10 years. And this for us is very important for a number of reasons, but the two key reasons is that given the nature of the funds that we manage, which have a maturity of at least a lifetime, it does not make sense to plan on a three-year cycle. We need to plan on a 10-year or longer cycle. And secondly, given the mandate that we have as the PIC, which is a dual mandate, we are not, like other traditional asset managers, only responsible for beating a particular threshold or achieving a certain level of investment performance. We are also expected to contribute to economic growth and development. And that necessarily means the way in which we invest has to take a long-term view. And this is the premise upon which all our plans are based. And the first slide that we have in front of us, Chair, is an indication of where we are now and where we would like to be in the next 10 years. And where we are is we have decided that, yes, we are the biggest asset manager in South Africa. Yes, we are the biggest asset manager on the continent. But that is not enough. It is necessary, but not sufficient to take South Africa to the next level. We would like to be the best asset manager, best in a number of ways. Continue to deliver returns consistently within the expectations of our mandate, to be able to contribute effectively to the development of South Africa, contribute effectively to the development of the rest of the continent, and to also contribute in the development of the skills and the capabilities of asset management across the areas in which you operate. So those two pillars are giving us the state where we are today and where we would like to be in the future. But there's a lot of things that we need to do in between, a lot of interventions that we need to consider. The two key ones is understanding our strengths and weaknesses as an organization, internally and also externally. And for us, one of the things that we need to deal with is skills, is also the technology that we use, which is going to enable us to do the things that we would like to do. These are not easy tasks. They are quite difficult tasks. If you think about the element of skills, what effectively it means is that we may have to go and draw the same skills that are being required by the private sector to come into the PIC to be able to deliver on our mandate. And the question is, how do we do that? Do we compete through money, or do we compete in another way, or do we consider other interventions, developing the skills ourselves? And that is not a short-term intervention. It's a long-term intervention. But it's a necessary intervention for us to be able to take us to where we're supposed to go to. So the first slide is basically a presentation of the context within which we operate. But in thinking about this, Chair, there's another mandate, part of the mandate which we think is very critical. Enhancing or contributing to empowerment, which is in the next slide. We have, after having defined where we want to be in the next 10 years, we have then said, how do we quantify this 10-year period? How are we going to say that we have achieved? And for us, we have crafted these indicators, which are going to give us an indication at the end of the 10 years whether we've achieved as the PIC. Also as a country. And just to give you an indication, with the first bullet on the slide, the one objective that we have always had was to develop asset management across the country. And that means enhancing or developing emerging managers such that they can compete with the larger managers in the country. If I can coin a phrase, developing an emerging or a black Old Mutual or a black Sanlam, that is going to compete head to head with those large institutions. And what we're saying is we're going to facilitate a program that is going to get emerging managers to be amongst the top three in the country by assets under management. Now, it could be one, it could be all three being emerging managers. And if we can achieve all three being emerging managers, that will be cherry on top of the cake. But you also realize that our achievements are not only measured in a South African context. They are also measured in a global context. And the last two bullets give an indication of how we are going to contribute when we engage in the rest of the world. We have concluded amongst ourselves that we are unlikely to have the same impact in developed countries as we do in developing and emerging countries. So we have carved out the BRICS states as an area of immediate consideration to influence our play in those in that area. And why BRICS? Is because we think that there is a lot of growth opportunity in those areas, which means it provides a huge potential for us to generate the returns that we're looking at. Whilst we're planning around this, an opportunity emerged or availed itself to us in Brazil through our investment in ABSA. And that effectively means, as a PIC, we're already operating in the BRICS through this opportunity that has emerged. On the African continent, I think the expectations are huge. They are looking at South Africa as this big economy with these huge resources. And the question is, how can we assist on the rest of the continent? So that becomes one of the issues that we'll have to take into account in deciding how we invest and where we actually invest. But we also know, Chair, that the long term is a series of short terms. You cannot make the 10 years if you haven't performed well in the first year, second or third year. And what the corporate plan basically does is to translate this dream of 10 years into a reality. And I think I can emphasize the overall goals that we've set for ourselves as an indication of how we can get to that end state. As a PIC, we need to remain a going concern. As a PIC, we need to continue convincing our principals or the entities that give us the money to manage that we're a good asset manager to continue managing their money. And that means we need to make sure that we continue delivering good performance, both in the short term and in the long term. And for us to be able to do that, we need to make sure that we're able to run an organization that is inherently sustainable, even without thinking about our relationship with principals. And the last objective is a very important one, which links to the 10 years, making sure that we facilitate the participation of South Africa in growing not only the South African economy, but the continental economy. And the benefits for that are quite big. One of the big benefits is that if the rest of the continent grows, it increases the market for SA Inc. And for us, we have concluded that we cannot invest in isolation of the macro economy. We have seen through the financial crisis that when the economic performance is negative, it will compromise our asset values, and the reverse is true. So the way in which we invest is to increase the efficiency of our economies, increase productivity, increase labor absorption, and increase competitiveness with the rest of the world. That is the only way in which we're going to remain in business, both as a PIC and as a country. And what we then do is, in thinking about our business, we then look very seriously in the relationship that we have with clients or the people that we manage money for, where in the next slide we give you an indication of how those are distributed. Predominantly, the GPF continues to be the biggest contributor of the assets that we manage. And what we try to do is making sure that we proportionately, in a very equitable fashion, deliver the capability that we can to all the clients under management. Chair, I am going to stop at this point. What I am going to request is, because you remembered Roy's name, I'll ask him to take over after me and take us through the developmental investment program and the Africa strategy. And then I will request Matshepo to then come in and give us an indication of what the financial implications are and to tell the committee whether or not we'll still be a going concern in 10 years. And then I'll come back to conclude. Thank you.
Good day, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I knew that remembering my name will have some consequences, and this is the start of it. Up on the screen is the four pillars of the developmental investment policy of the Sibaya Fund. Just to give some perspective or some background to it, up until 2010, on the developmental side, a lot of the portfolio was concentrated on your BEE transactions. However, in 2009, the GEPF had researched its or reframed its developmental investment policy to make it much more broader. And in August 2010, they had published the developmental investment policy. Leading up to that publication of the policy, we at the Sibaya had restructured ourselves to concentrate on four key areas. That is investment in economic infrastructure, investment in social infrastructure, investment in environmental sustainability, and in enterprise development and triple BEE. On the next slide, those areas are expanded, and you'd find that our allocation to the developmental investment side of the business used to be 3%, but in 2005 had increased to 5%. The previous portfolio that comprised the BEE portfolio, much of it has been unwound, and that cash is being deployed into these four areas. So on economic infrastructure, we have it covers several areas: energy, logistics, water infrastructure, commuter transport, liquid fuels, broadband. In social infrastructure, it's affordable housing, health care, and education. On the environmental side, most of the portfolio is relating to the REFIT program. And then on the last pillar, the emphasis is on enterprise development and high job creation projects in certain priority sectors. You'll see that the allocation at the bottom is 40% under economic infrastructure and 20% in the rest of them. In the slide that follows, which shows the progress to date, which has taken place in the last 3 years, when we've moved over to a more broader developmental investment mandate. And the economic infrastructure, the allocation being roughly 20 billion, of which 1.2 billion has been invested and about another billion in the pipeline. It has largely been concentrated on the logistics side. On social infrastructure is where we have made quite a bit of progress, where we've invested and committed about 4 billion rand of the 10 billion allocation. That has been largely in the affordable housing and education side. The affordable housing, we're looking at where we're providing housing units to households earning between 3,500 and 15,000 rand a month. On the economic growth side, we have, which is a relatively new area as well for us, a lot of the focus thus far has been on the SMME, and then in terms of priority sectors, we've made some investments on the agriculture and agribusiness side. On environmental sustainability, thus far we've committed about half of the portfolio to projects. This relates mainly to the renewable energy projects that have recently been driven by the Department of Energy. Now, as from the previous slide, you see the mandate is quite broad. It covers many areas in which your normal development financial institutions cover. So that makes it necessary for us to restructure the buyer fund to be geared towards the delivery under this broad mandate. And that has been triggered off by the GEPF development investment policy that I've spoken about. Going forward, what we envisage is under each pillar, we will unpack them into funds, which we'll probably use to leverage funding from others so that we can maximize the developmental impact. Also, by following the structure, we'll be able to build up our human resource capacity to actually deal with the developmental challenges that we are facing in the country. The structure of it will be your typical private equity type of model, where we'll be the general partner in the partnership, with the GEPF, who is at this point in time the only investor in the fund. If we move over to the next slide, well, that gives you an indication of the structure and the governance that will surround this developmental investment policy that we'll execute, where the board will be accountable and it'll be driven through the investment committee, which will be made up of several fund investment panels. So what would happen is that we'd segregate the portfolio into its key areas, where the projects will be approved through those particular funds. The oversight body to it being the investment committee, as well as the advisory board, which will comprise the investment committee of the GEPF. So that would be the structure that we would use in the new model going forward. If I can just move over and turn into the Africa strategy, we will follow a similar type of approach that we do in locally, where it's a collaboration between government, private sector, and other funders. In our strategy, we'll be looking at the development of the continent in a manner where it also creates opportunities for SA Inc. Naturally, by increasing our investments beyond the borders of South Africa, we envisage that the portfolio will be further and better diversified. I think there is general consensus worldwide that the new frontier for investment is on the African continent. It's characterized by rapid growth and stability politically. There's powerful demographic trends emerging in terms of driven by urbanization and the increase in consumption capacity. It's endowed with natural resources, and one can see inter-regional cooperation increasing from its current level of about 10%, as well as there's improved governance. In terms of how we plan to invest on the continent, we have an allocation of 5%. Because this is our first foray onto the continent, we think that we need to enter it with caution and enter it in conjunction with partners who also understand the continent. Therefore, we will collaborate with institutions such as locally, the DBSA and the IDC. Then we look at multilateral organizations such as the IFC, CDC, then PROPACO, the French. Our allocation in terms of this is to by and large go through funds, invest in through funds on the continent, where there would be other investors. Typically, you have normally not less than 5 investors in a fund. So I think that would also, we'd be able to tap into the knowledge base of other funders as well as to share the risk. Then we'd look at co-investments and partnerships, and later on we'll show you a transaction that we've concluded recently. And then as we begin to gain a better understanding of the markets on the continent, we'd explore direct investment. You will probably find that most of our investment will be done in unlisted space, because if you take the stock markets in these countries, they generally tend to be small and illiquid. The target sectors that we would look at would be on the consumer and retail side, agribusiness. I mean, I think on the African continent, it comprises approximately 60% of agricultural land worldwide is on the continent, so there must be opportunity there. We know about resources and mining. There'll be quite a concentration in terms of infrastructure, because that forms the backbone of growth in other sectors such as manufacturing. So with there, I think the emphasis would be on like logistics, on power, which is an issue, and telecommunications. And then we would target other sectors in terms of property and financial services. In terms of our progress on the Africa strategy to date, we've approved an investment in EcoBank, which we see as a strategic investment on the continent, through which we can cooperate in other areas such as co-investment. We envisage that once we've finalized the mandate on the Africa side, that we'd be rolled out in the second quarter of this year. As I mentioned earlier, that we'd be looking at channeling a lot of our funds through other fund managers. And currently we are drafting a framework for the selection of these fund managers in order for us to invest the allocation that has been given to us. At this point, I'll hand over to Matsepo, the CFO at the PIC, who will take us through the effects of the strategy that we have highlighted, show the effects on the financial position of the PIC. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair and members. Mine is just an easy road to translate the objectives into numbers. Based on what is presented right up there, you'll see the revenue is anticipated to grow in 2030. The growth is anticipated to continue into 2014 and 2015. The significant reason behind the growth in the revenue of like 28% is as a result of the development and finance. When you refer to the expenses, you'll see that there's a 55% growth in year 2013, but this growth continues to decrease when you go further into the 2015 year. The reason behind this is that for the initial phase of the implementation of the new objective and the development investment, it requires capitalization into the business, meaning that we'll require additional resources, additional premises and capacity to ensure that we meet the objective. Ultimately, the net impact on the net profit of that will continue being a growing concern over the next 3 years, and it is anticipated that this will continue in the next 10 years. And then I'll hand over to my boss.
Chair, I believe in efficiency, but I didn't expect this level of efficiency. Thank you, Chair. Just to conclude, Chair, we would like to draw the attention of the committee to the kinds of changes that will be observed in the PIC, and some of these are going to be significant. You will see some of them showing in the numbers. Clearly, we're going to have a different geographical spread going forward. We hope that we can be able to attract the skills that we need to attract in order to be able to deliver on our mandate, which means capacitation is going to be the next agenda for the PIC. given the risks associated with going into the rest of the continent, the complexity and the differential risks that you are going to be exposed to, which we are not familiar with, we will rely on partnerships, as Roy has indicated. Empowerment is not going to be forgotten. Even as we go abroad, we will insist on continuing the empowerment agenda. And hopefully we are going to do all the things without compromising performance. Performance will remain as the centerpiece for our strategy. Before I stand down, Chair, I forgot two people who needed to be introduced. They ended up sitting behind us. There's a colleague, Vilna Lowe, who is head of company of the secretariat, and then it's Kaya Butelezi, colleague from the GPS. Thank you very much, Chair.
Honorable members, I'm still focusing. You want to comment? Okay. Honorable members, we have the presentation by the PIC before us. Let me allow you to make comments and pose questions, if any. Honorable Kuran Wolf, followed by Honorable Riege Madlamini, Honorable Ross, then Tim Harris. Honorable Harris, you will then be followed by Honorable Van Boyen. I hope you recall in that order. Honorable Koranov.
Thank you, Chairperson. A very short question. If you look at your projections on your financial sustainability in the growth in revenue, 14% for 2012, 28 and 30, 31. Just a simple question. Is that realistic in terms of what's happening in the world and in South Africa? And we don't know even when Europe will get out of their problems and how it will impact on us. You know, if you were selling shares, obviously I would have invested there if that is realistic. I just want one question. Is it realistic?
Mine is on the facilitation and empowering the property service provider. So what mechanism can PIC present as the one which is actually beneficial to the previously marginalized by maybe reflecting on the outcomes for the past financial year, especially in the retail market, because the concentration to the secondary towns is very critical and actually responding to the question that says what is it that we can say it has benefited the previously marginalized communities. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, one is to actually thank the Deputy Minister and his team for coming to us and give us the information that has been presented to us. My first clarity or questions goes to the Chief Executive on the key empowerment outcomes. Now, I would like to understand, are these empowerment outcomes short-term or long-term outcomes? If they are then different. There are short terms and the outcomes. Which are the short terms? Which ones are the long terms? And having said that, what is your target? What the population target? Whom are you targeting? Whom exactly are you targeting? And at what percentage your target will be based on? And then the other one is if then you know whom are you going to be, you will be targeting, what impact then this contribution, this initiative will create to the rural development? Still to the CEO, we are talking about other people's money, the money that was contributed by the teachers, the police, the nurses, the doctors, everybody. But to your strategy, nothing has been said about them. How even? What does this mean? I mean, can they partake on the towards this economic growth or towards this investments, initiatives or projects? Why are they there? Just being seen as contributors, and when it comes to the economic economic growth and investment what outcomes, they are not being seen as the players. Can you assist us on that one? To Roy, you are talking about the economic growth and focusing mainly on the agriculture and the agribusiness. It's so easy to say that, and we do understand it's very easy to say that. But we are rather expecting a more statement with some flesh, because they are giving us bones here. What model are you going to use? I mean, if you are saying economic growth, we talk about the rural development here when you talk about the agribusiness and agriculture. Exactly, what are you saying? Because if you can make an impact there or a need there, I'm telling you this country will shift. Because agriculture, if you're looking at it, it used to sit as number two, number three on the market. But right now it's right down, and this the PIC is coming telling us that this is what you're going to do to ensure economic growth. So what is the model? How did you arrive at that? And how are you going to assist us to understand even further what you're going to do? You have also said, Roy, that you have allocated 5% towards African initiative or the project. What sectors did you use to arrive at the 5% that you have allocated for African projects? If then you have allocated that 5% towards the African projects, as South Africans, what are we going to benefit? What percentage are we going to benefit? Because you can't reach the 5% as a projection, and you're not telling us what is going to be an outcome. What percentage, as far as the outcome of that initiative? Thank you very much.
You are the next, Honourable Ross.
Thank you, Chair. Just a quick remark regarding the where we invest and do we invest. If I can just take an example like the Euro crisis, any business person would get the immediate sense that, you know, to stay away currently from Europe, and then also America having problems and picking up their heads. And then also if you look at the BRIC countries, which seems to be the preference and perhaps politically led so, I know there's huge challenges in terms of developmental issues that needs to be addressed, but that's the right way to go. But it's complex and it's difficult for people to take decisions where to invest and how to invest and how much to invest. I think it's not an easy task at all. But taking into consideration your developmental aspect that you would like to cover, I think that is hugely important. Because I can't see that any business person would, for just taking an example, but really invest, there are business people investing in renewable energy, but it's not always that easy to get the correct returns from renewable energy. The pricing in terms of renewable energy products are very high at this point in time compared to for example, electricity, which is cheaper, coal-based, and it's difficult to take those decisions. And I think that the PIC is in a unique position to take very difficult decisions that has to be taken in terms of getting the right return on investment. And it's not as easy as in the private sector because you have so many more issues that you need to consider. And I think to come up with the correct methodology in terms of investment, I think it's complex and it's difficult for us perhaps to make a comment regarding this. And I don't think I'm not sure if I will put my few pennies into the to the pot in that one. But yes, we would like it would be very interesting to interested to know how you make your preferences in terms of where you really invest and how you do it. If I can just add something that slipped my mind, yes. I'm very pleased with the Africa investments in terms of risk sharing and taking on partners on board that is knowledgeable regarding this, the Development Bank of South Africa, and the Echo Banks. I think improved partnerships could mean a lot for us. And I wanted to make a remark about the cost factor and the cost of business increasing, and you could see this from your one slide where the expenses just suddenly rose, and I'm not sure if it was all capital invested or was it just initial funding in the initial stages of projects. Because in many of those huge projects, social developmental projects, there's a unique funding model. If I can just take for an example nuclear or those huge build projects, that the initial stage, the construction phase is very, very expensive, and you cannot expect a return in that initial stage. But in the latter stages, when there's an operational stage, it seems to that investors then get their return on the money. So it's a question of wait and get a better return later on, and I think that makes it even more complex. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Van Boyen, you like him?
Me, Richard.
Okay. Over to you.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Chair, and to the PIC for the presentation. I thought it was interesting that you chose to focus on your new Africa strategy. It raises a question for me, and I must say I totally support the initiative, but it raises a question for me about the focus of the institution given the objectives of government, as you've reflected in your strat plan, and particularly the president's focus in the State of the Nation, which is really about building domestic economic infrastructure. Now, one briefing note that we were given by our researchers here, and if the members of the committee can see on page 5 of the research note we were given, says that PIC has cited that they will not be undertaking any major capital investments for the 2012-13 financial year. However, in the Sona address, President Zuma declared 2012 as a year for massive infrastructure development drives. Now, I tried to search the strat plan for the source of that research note, but perhaps I'll leave it to you to clarify what's being indicated there. Because if the PIC is like many organisations, it's difficult to focus on more than one major initiative at once. And I'm interested in how you focus on the expansion into Africa while also rebuilding the economic infrastructure of the country. And perhaps the answer is that you haven't, the research is correct, and there haven't been a commitment to undertake any major capital investments this year. On page 7 of your corporate plan, there's a commitment to, in the second to last paragraph, commitment that a smaller percentage of client funds are and will be managed through external fund managers going forward. And then the plan says that at the end of 2011, 11 fund managers were appointed to manage 25% of the equities portfolio. That's a point in time. Where were we before and where are we going? What is the objective? What are the implications for those existing fund managers? I'm interested, what are the criteria by which the PIC maintains the management of the GEPF? How is that mandate given and renewed? What is the arrangement there? I understand the PIC holds roughly half of the bond issue that SANRAL put out to fund the tolling project. Given that the project is due to go ahead at the end of this month, but there's some court challenge at the very least, has the PIC considered the implications of that project not going ahead for your investments in those bonds? And then lastly, there have been statements recently around prescribed assets and the state stepping in to tell managers such as yourselves where you should be investing. Do you believe that this is something that the South African government will adopt with any great likelihood? And if it does, what is the PIC's response to that new position? Are the presenters able to comment on the actuarial surplus of the Government Employees Pension Fund? Or is that something which we need to address to the fund itself? Are you able to? If you are, then my interest is, what is that surplus? You're not able to. Sorry, I saw nodding. Okay. Then I would hold that. If anybody can answer that question, I'm interested what the actuarial surplus of the pension fund is. Thank you, Chair.
No, that will be responded to next week by the principal. Okay. No, they are not here, that's what I'm concerned. If they are here, they are observers. Okay. Agreed? Honorable Van Rijn.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start by welcoming the presentation. Chair, let me also start by indicating that I've noted with interest how the PIC compared its key objectives, I mean, to national government objectives. I think that was very helpful, and I think there's a lot of area to improve on that particular information. That information is on page 11 of your the document that you referred to as a shareholders' compact. I think that was very helpful to us as members of parliament. And also, let me commend the PIC for the trajectory that they are taking in terms of, as a proponent, of course, of African Renaissance, but also as someone who understands that as South Africa, we won't be able to move in terms of our development if Africa is not moving. So the trajectory that has been taken to invest into Africa is a very helpful one. But also, I don't think you could resist, I mean, the growth, I mean, potential that has been displayed by our continent. So I think this is a step in the right direction. Having said that, Chair, I just wanted to check with this move. Of course, there are also other offshore investments that you are undertaking. Are there any unique potential risk that we need to know of as we take this particular direction? But also, I was very impressed by the fact that we are not only driven by returns as we do this thing, as PNC. You are also considering aspects of empowerment. Now, I don't know to what extent you deal with that particular challenge, because in some countries, I know it's a hot potato. But I also wanted to check what are other measures to be employed to make sure that you don't invest our money into entities that are a bit unscrupulous in terms of financial practices and corporate governance issues. My second question, Chair, will be on the, I think I've been covered by Honorable Matlamino on the issue of your empowerment outcomes. I think we need more detailed information around, more especially for the plan that is being presented to us now, we need to know what are your specific targets around your empowerment outcomes. And lastly, I want to focus my comment. I've made an interesting observation here that some of your board members were earlier appointed as commissioners. And when you talk to their service, you don't consider their service as commissioners. I'm not sure was that intentional or is that provided for by corporate governance aspects. You will have to clarify that. But also, I wanted to check, because if you look into King III approach on issues of corporate governance, King III is very clear around issues of composition, the composition of your board, in as far as the independence of non-executive directors is concerned, and it calls for at least annual rotation of one third of your non-executive directors, annual, and then it calls for those who go beyond 9 years, at least there must be some annual assessment of the aspects of the independence and performance. I think the King III report is very clear on that. I would be very much interested to get to know your compliance as an institution on these issues. How are you faring in as far as this issue is concerned? I think those are my few questions, Chair, around this interesting strategic plan. Thank you very much.
Madam?
Mine is on slide 5, I think. It's the investors in the PIC. I see that the GPS contribute 90% to the PIC. Now, I want to know whether they said in their introduction that some of their staff are looking for new investors. Are you concentrating also on, for example, the UIF to raise their contribution to the PIC and the other contributors there that you mentioned on page 5? Thank you.
We're done on our side. Now, you'll come back later, Tim. Let's allow them to respond. We've got time pressures, but I think these are very important issues that we need to deal with. Let's see how far we can perform. Deputy Minister?
Okay, Chair, I'll, as usual, I'll touch on the easy ones and allow the Chief Executive to end his salary. Chair, on the last one that Honourable Adams asked, whether having one investor at 90%, and what are we looking at when we look at the new ones? We are out looking for new investors, including members of Parliament. If you were to look at where your own pensions, it would be interesting to see whether you're not looking at investing with the PIC, knowing our track record. So please do help us. but I don't think we're only looking at the others increasing their shareholding, but we're looking at other state entities investing, because that was the purpose of the establishment of the PIC. Looking at the number of them, including the CETAs, we're looking at all other state entities that might be investing elsewhere, and we're saying if we want to be the best, we also want to continue to grow, and we are the safest investment or asset management institution. One of the questions that came, I think, from Mr. Harris regarding the prescribed assets, as we indicated that we take our mandate from our investors. It's only when we are given a mandate by our investors that we determine the asset classes where we would invest in. And I would imagine at the moment there is a debate out there. Our clients haven't come up with a proposition. It's a debate that we should actually, as a country, be engaging in at the appropriate levels. When the time comes, that's when we would be able to, as the PIC, respond whether that is in the interest of our clients. You also raised the issue of the Sanral bonds and whether we, the PIC, I'm sure the chief executive will talk to that, but I must indicate that investing in Sanral bonds is not only about one aspect of it, which at the moment is a subject of the court challenges and all other situations. The investment is in Sanral as a company, and at the time the decision was taken to invest in these bonds, Sanral was a stable company, and we still think Sanral is a stable company, and it's one of those entities, as I've indicated, that we should actually should stay with. There was also a question with regards as to how the 5% has been decided with regards to the Africa strategy. Again, as you indicated, that is determined by the client. If the client determines the 5%, we stick to the 5%, and we try and make sure that we get the best returns for the 5%. And if the client increases the 5%, we will abide. Chief Executive, allow me to delegate the rest to you and the team. In fact, the questions, the members were very clear who they were asking these questions to. So please do take your questions. If there's anything else that is still outstanding, I'll be quite happy to come back. Chief Executive.
Thanks, Chair. I will go through each. Those that I can answer, I will answer. Those that I cannot answer, I will delegate to my colleagues, and they can prepare their answers. The first question on the growth in terms of the revenue numbers and whether or not they are realistic, I'll request at a later stage Umatepo to complement what I'm going to say on that. What drives those numbers is a change, fundamentally a change in the mandate and the scope of the PIC. The change in the mandate enables the PIC to do business in areas in which we were not doing business before. Secondly, as part of the change in the mandate, unlike the old mandate, what this mandate is doing is it recognizes the need for new skills in the PIC to be able to compete effectively with investors not only in South Africa but elsewhere, which means the mandate is proposing a matching of fees to be in line with market levels or with market rates, where previously the fees that the PIC earned were a very small fraction of what a private asset manager would enjoy. So that by itself alters the base and enables us to be able to do a lot of things that we couldn't do in the past. And that is the key reason for the change in the revenue flows. The second question was on facilitation of property development and who is being targeted. Our view is that the facilitation of property development is achieved in two respects. One is with respect to what we see as enterprise development, where we, in the properties that we invest in, we will give business opportunities to small enterprises to provide services to the properties that we own. Over and above that, we are going to, or we already have an allocation of space, which is typically known as GLA, that is allocated to small businesses at a lower rate or a lower cost than your traditional businesses. And in terms of targets, there is no particular subgroup that we're looking at. We're looking at all emerging investors. So long as you are a developing investor, you are going to be considered for the development in terms of the property space. But what is even more important, thinking about the property initiative, is that amongst all the investments that we do as a PIC, property is the most tangible. That's what people see, and that's what people associate with the PIC. Even though it's a small portion of our total investment, that means people see it as something that affects their lives on a day-to-day basis. The shopping centers that we invest in, small, medium to small income housing, those are the kinds of things that society relates with and they are very emotional about. So wherever we invest in property, the likelihood is that you are going to have other industries developing around that property. In particular, when you think about the retail investments that we undertake, not only in the urban centers, but also in the outlying areas. If you have a shopping center that has a post office, that has a bank, that has a hardware shop, immediately it reduces the transportation cost of people going to the city centers to get the same services that they're getting around. And what it also does is it promotes the development of small entrepreneurs around that shopping mall. So it is the best way of driving the LED concept. Put a shopping mall, you bring industrialization to the rural sectors. So for us, the shopping malls are very, very important, and we're passionate about them, not only from an investment or a return point of view, but also from the impact in which they have to society. The one on agriculture, I will leave to Roy. What is the risk of diversification? I will leave to Leon, who is the acting CIO. I should have mentioned that earlier. Renewable energy, I will leave to Roy. They will share with Dion. Then there was a question of increasing costs in the outer years. I'll ask Matepo to deal with that one. Why diversify to Africa? I would like to leave that to Koketo. Why is no capital expenditure according to our plan? I think there what we need to do, Chair, is to try and do a separation between what we talk about with respect to capital expenditure in the accounts or the financials of the PIC versus the facilitation of capital investment by the PIC using third party funds. When we think about the PIC, we do not see investing in any new significant capital in the near term. But in terms of the monies that we manage on behalf of clients, those resources are still going to be directed towards capital investment by investors in the economy. Now, what is key is to understand that the PIC is not an originator of projects, but the PIC is a facilitator of capital investments by providing the necessary capital. So it will be the entrepreneurs out there in the private sector who will say, we want to invest in agriculture, in industrial activities, and in all sorts of activities, and all that we do is provide the capital for that to happen. Then there was a question on the number of asset managers. I would like to leave that to Leon as well. Mandates with the GPF and how it is managed. To address you as chairman or deputy minister. 10,000. Deputy Minister has alluded to that, but I would like Leon to provide some bit of detail behind that. The issue of actuarial surplus, there was an indication that it's not going to be dealt with by PIC, but I think there is a technical response that may have to be given there. You can only be able to do this if you are able to do an asset liability matching process for a pension fund. And an asset liability matching basically means you need to understand what the liabilities are on the one side and how you grow those assets to match the liability. Now, the relationship that we have with the GPF is that they do the asset liability matching and they then decide the investment strategy which they then give to the EPRC to implement. This is why when we talk about our responsibility, we always say we operate according to a mandate, and the mandate gets given to us by the clients after they have worked out what they need. So I thought I should provide that technical input. Support for Africa, I think that has been given. What are the unique risks that we're faced with in going to the rest of the continent? That will fit into the response that Dion is going to give, but I think there are three key unique risks that we need to concern ourselves with. The one is information asymmetry, where what we have found is that where there are no liquid capital markets of stock exchanges, the likelihood is that the flow of information is constrained. Therefore, when you want to make a decision on an investment, you have to dig deeper to work out the extent of the risk that you're taking. The second one is sovereign risk, which is known. And the last one is the underlying commercial risk of what you're taking. You may invest in an asset today and it may look lucrative and the economy turns tomorrow. Nobody can predict that, so it's a risk that we would have to live with. How do we deal with empowerment? I think that question will be answered by the first two questions that I responded to. What are the targets on empowerment outcomes? We would like to think that slide 3 tries to explicitly quantify what empowerment means to us going forward and also gives us a marker to the end of the 10 years. But if there's more information that's required, we can deal with that. The issue of tens of board members, the Deputy Minister has dealt with it. If you want to come back, you can deal with it as well. Search of new investors. The presentation is not talking about us discarding the relationships that we have with clients and going out to find new clients. But what it is emphasizing is identifying new partners which we are going to carry into the rest of the continent and the rest of the world. And the key reason behind that is because those partners that we would have identified are entities that are already doing business in the dispensations that we're going into. They understand the unique risks that I've just listed, and they can be able to manage those risks better than we can as the PIC. And we're going to achieve the same outcome at a lower risk and a lower cost, which means it's a higher return for the client. So that is the logic with which we're going to deal with it. May I request that we go to myself where you deal with all your issues, then we go to Leon, and then it will be Roy and Gokit.
Thank you, Chair. The first question, which is supporting what the CEO said relating to revenue. Of the 123 million, that is the increase in the revenue between the year of 2012 and 2013, 90 million of it is attributed to the change in mandate.
Can I just disturb? Chair, can we, when we get answers, can we get the detailed answers on our questions, please? Thank you, Chair.
No, I'm going to come to that at the end. CEO, you said the Deputy Minister, interchangeably the Chair of the PIC, has responded to the question. Yeah. Be with us in the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Jay. Just reiterate, of the 123 million that we have anticipated in the increase between the unaudited numbers to the 2030 numbers, 90 million of it is attributed to the change in the mandate, which is that development investment, but the big driver of it is in the change in the fee structure. Inside the 123, we've got 22 million, which is also for the offshore investment, which is also attributable to the change in mandate. The remainder is as a result of the growth in the fixed income and the equities. We've assumed a conservative growth between those two types of instruments, which there have not been a change in mandate relating to them. The question relating to cost. The key driver of the cost is that, already explained in our presentation, is that the need to moving from being the big to the best means that we need to attract new type of resources, new type of people. So a big cost driver to this is the attracting of new staff component. In there, we phase through the recruitment into a period of 3 years, but with anticipation that the first initial phase, which you see in 2013, will be the biggest phase where the new recruits will take into consideration. Over and above that, I think other costs which have increased is travel costs, because now there's a need to do foreign travel within the business. So that will result in increase in our costs. In terms of capital, it's not reflected in there, by anticipation that initially capital will mean that we have to buy IT systems in order to support the investment strategy.
Thank you. Dion?
Thanks, Jim. I think the first question that was directed, or the CEO gave to me to answer, is the question about diversification. The question, or the reference, was made to the crisis in Europe and the economies there. I think, again, we would like to highlight that the client prescribed in a mandate to us how to invest these funds. Historically, the GPF only had domestic or South African investments, majority of that, nearly 50% in equity, listed equity, and the other 30% in bonds, the balance made up by Sabaya properties. I think Roy alluded to it earlier. In 2010, they came to us and they said they want to revisit the mandate. There was a question about the mandate. They often had to review. That can happen at any stage. It was reviewed in August 2010. In that revision of the mandate, the GPF said they want to invest and diversify 10% of their assets under management into the offshore market. 5% of that goes into developed markets, and 5% goes into Africa. The 5% that goes into Africa, Roy has touched on that. I'm not going to allude to that again. So, with regard to the diversification, number one is prescribed by the client, the GPF, in terms of the mandate. And then secondly, of that 10% of the assets were to be, not in South Africa anymore. 5% Africa, 5% offshore. Of that 5% in developed markets, 3% is in equity. So that will be in America and Europe, bourses, wherever. And 2% only is in bonds. The reference was made to the euro crisis. Yes, we do not buy euro bonds. I can give you that comfort. We buy SANRAL bonds, but not euro bonds. The decision that was taken in consultation with the client on the mandate, on those investments, is that we prefer to go to short duration bonds. The maximum duration of bonds, the duration is basically a tenor which measures your risk, was a 3-year tenor. So, yes, we are in the market, in those developed markets, 2% of the fund in bonds. It's managed by an offshore manager for us, but we decided to take lower risk than what is market normal in terms of that benchmark. I think the next question was with reference to the external managers. You were quite correct as quoted there. What we basically have with the equity fund, and I'll get to the fixed income fund as well, I'll touch on that just afterwards. The equity fund as it's currently 75% of that portfolio, and let's say again, I'm going to repeat, 50% of the GPF assets is basically in equity. So of that trillion rand, half of that is in local listed equity in South Africa. The MTNs, Anglos, breweries, etc., etc. Of that funds that we manage, 75% of the equity portfolio is managed in-house. We've got a team that manages that. The 25% is outsourced to these external managers. So what we refer to is the core satellite approach. Your core is the 75%, and then you've got the satellite managers, these external managers that manages this 25%. The reason being is that this core can manage the benchmark or the index, and these 25% outside external managers should try and generate that extra income or alpha, as we refer to it. What we have, unfortunately, again, this is only for the GPF, what we have unfortunately found out now is that the more managers you have, you're starting to lose some of your diversification again because there's competition, or the same client's assets is chasing, or same client money is chasing the same assets. So it's not really that working that well. We're going to continue to have the external managers, but I think there's fault to reduce the number of those external managers. If you appoint too many, it's just the competition becomes, it's not level playing field. With regard to the fixed income side, we want to do that as well. The GPF, the client has requested us to do that. What makes it a bit more difficult with fixed income is the fixed income market is relatively small. Even if you buy a Sanral bond, everybody picks it up. So if you're going to do that and you give money to somebody external again, let's say I give money to Pietro, there's a good possibility that tomorrow there's an asset on the table that we both want to buy, and she's prepared to pay more expensively than I am and so forth. And so the client, the ultimate client, the GPF, is going to lose money because that asset's price is getting overvalued. I think that touched on the external managers. So we are looking at external managers on the fixed income side as well. The preference will be what we used to call incubation managers, now enterprise development, is to have small BEE funds try and sort of coach them in a three-year cycle to get in there. Again, we've done that on equity side. On the fixed income side, fixed income is not such a sexy market. There's not a lot of players in that market. The GPS mandate, like I said, all the mandates we've got mandates of all our clients. It can be reviewed at any point in time, but preferably every second year. What happens, majority of the cases, is that I think the CEO referred to the asset liability modeling. If there's a major change in your asset and liabilities of a fund, that is basically when the mandate will be reviewed. And I think that's what happened in the case of GPF. The fund is growing at such a phenomenal rate, and only to have assets in South Africa was creating a problem. On the equity market, you basically have 15% of the market, can I say captive, and on the bond market, only on government bonds alone, the GPF alone owns 20% of all the government bond issues domestically. So I'm trying to say it can be reviewed at any time, but it's not often that it happens. It's probably because of an asset liability modeling study or so forth. The prescribed assets, I think the Deputy Minister has responded to that. I think we are comfortable with that. I think for the time being, then I'm done. See you. The Sanral, we can discuss.
Yeah.
I think the Minister did touch on it.
Okay. Roy, you're the next.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. On the economic growth side, perhaps I was not clear in my presentation, but on the economic growth side, what we look at is that we look at sectors in which there is high job creation, and one of which we've identified as being agriculture. But there would be other sectors as well, such as in manufacturing, construction, and tourism, as well as those sectors that are incorporated in the Industrial Policy Action Plan 3. What we're As I mentioned, on the new developmental investment strategy, it has been something that is new. One of the first projects that we invested was in an agriculture fund, which is a 500 million rand fund. About 20% of that is invested. What we look at when we are investing in these in the farms, apart from the returns that come from it, we have also incorporated issues that relate to the job creation, adult basic education training, skills development, HIV and AIDS awareness, those sort of benchmarks. We are currently doing an impact assessment of all our projects that we've done under the developmental investment side, which and the statistics of that and the impact will be incorporated when we publish our annual report. Insofar as the rural development side of it is concerned, we have invested in two intermediaries to provide loans to rural-based women, and they particularly engage in activities such as on the agriculture side, as well as like sowing and those sort of activities. With the amount of funds that we have provided, which we allow them to revolve every year, you have about 40,000 women benefiting from that facility. On the renewable energy side, yes, it is a new area of investment compared to the traditional sources of energy. For us, we're taking a long-term view on it because, I mean, you'd have the investments on these are usually 15 to 25 years. In terms of the return which is coming out, is you're probably looking at returns of about 17%. The risk that we manage the risk on that by making sure that the developer that we select in terms of looking at in the projects, one is done on a turnkey basis. So we are going to look at their experience, their history of doing this before, their financial stability. And apart from that, they also have to be investors in the project. So this is what we are doing in terms to manage the risk. But given that the tariffs are contracted, we think that it is a reasonable risk to undertake, though it would require patient capital because you've probably got about a two-year implementation period when you have no revenues while you are building the structure. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, sir. In terms of investing for the rest of the continent, I think one of the key considerations that we take after the client has already prescribed to us that he wants to invest 5% to the rest of the continent is that we look at the rationality behind exactly what is in Africa that actually the client is trying to capture other than the basic diversification of the portfolio. And one of the key features that actually came out was the fact that, which has already been alluded to my colleagues, is that if you look at for the next 5 years, the U.S. has been expected to have a GDP growth of about 2.5%, while Western Europe is expected to have about 1.5%, whilst Africa has actually been looked at about 6% growth. So the growth dynamics also backed by the demographics of the country and the increased consumption that has already been placed in the continent makes sense to actually diversify into the rest of the continent. And one other aspect that you can actually look at as an institutional investor is the fact that there are funding sources that already exist within the continent. The first one being actually listed equities which have been invested on the continent, some of which is listed equities. I think it's about 28% is actually listed of the market cap of the continent, is listed on the continent, which is about $32 billion, which are the key basic funding sources, U.S. dollars, funding sources that they get. But you also get funding sources that comes outside of the country but investing into the continent, such as the London Stock Exchange, the Canadian Stock Exchange, which is roughly quantified to about $73 billion. And only $10 billion is actually in private equity. Now, the fund that we are actually looking into, the client has allocated 5%, which is roughly about $4 to $5 billion. So with only 10 billion of private equity that is actually going to the continent, we are going to contribute roughly 40% of that. Now, in South Africa, what we've seen is that this developmental investments that we have already invested in, we've actually seen how that filters into the corporate SA in terms of building roles, how that actually filters into making sure that our SA Inc. is actually operating efficiently and delivering the returns that the fund that the fund is actually requiring. Now, we are going to continue with our developmental investment into the rest of the continent. And what we found is the fact that poor infrastructure cuts about GDP by 2%. This is actually research that has shown that it cuts about 2%. So as the first step into the rest of the continent, what we're going to do is actually look at infrastructure, because it's a more of a low-hanging fruit rather than something that is actually something that's needed, that people need. It fits into our developmental investments, and this is actually the main reason that we will be moving into the rest of the continent. And I think our growth strategy has already been complimented by the members, and we thank you very much for that.
And there's one question for you. Do you want to deal with renewable energy sustainability issues?
I think I can just
add on to what Roy said earlier, and that is that we are long-term investors, and we are happy to wait a longer period to get the returns. But there's also the, if I can use the word, the social effect of investing in green investments, and that is most of our pensioners spend a vast amount of their pension on food supplies, so that's a combating climate change issue. So that's also part of the thinking behind these investments. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. And our apologies for having missed the question with regards to, but I had spotted it, and our apologies. The issue with regards to the non-independence of long-serving members, you know, in other instances when you serve long, you get an award. In the corporate world, if you serve long, you get the job. So, yes, and as the committee would recall, that this was a matter that was raised by the committee, yes, and we acknowledge, and at that time, most of those members, tenure had already been renewed, and as you know, that their renewal also preceded the King III report. We are in discussion with the shareholder to look at when the next rotation comes, because they are appointed for a period of time. When the next rotation comes, we are going to ensure that there is compliance and there is a paper already, and we are in discussions. But we also want to avert a situation where we end up without a board altogether, only because we have retired everyone. But there is a process underway that seeks to address that. And as Honourable Van Rooyen correctly pointed out, that there is also the period when some of the members served as commissioners. And in terms of the King report, I don't think the part when they were commissioners, the period when they were commissioners, is taken into account. But we are in the process of working on total compliance with the King report voluntarily, and in line with the principles of good governance. So the matter is receiving attention, and the shareholder is being consulted. Thanks.
I guess there won't be any follow-ups because of time. Tim?
Just one very quick follow-up. I think the committee forgot to congratulate the CEO on his recent appointment to the board of the UN Global Compact. I think it was yesterday. It was announced yesterday, at least. But it does raise a question for me, Chair, because it was mentioned that the PIC has a 20% stake in MTN, which is also a signatory of the Global Compact, and is facing some quite serious allegations based on the human rights and corruption principles of that compact. So both in terms of your the CEO's new position on the board, but also in terms of the PIC's general position as a signatory, I'm interested in the views on that case.
Chair, perhaps let me also congratulate the chief executive and indicate that I suspected that that congratulations from Mr. Harris was not without a tail. But to indicate that, you know, when the PIC invests in companies, like the PIC is an investor in MTN, I think it's important that you have very little control over where then the companies that were invested in operate. We are in a situation, in a global situation, where both the points that you are raising are going to be tested, and we are going to abide by the country position on these matters, and the country we're going to act in a responsible manner, but also there are processes that the country has entered into under the auspices of our international relations, under the auspices of our international relations policy and our department, to engage with the companies, but also with the countries concerned and the United Nations to ensure that there is compliance. So I think the PIC is a responsible investor, and we will abide by the country's position on this matter. Thanks.
Okay, good. I think we've come to the end of our discussions, honorable members and deputy minister and your team. The CEO was at some point not sure whether he should address you as the deputy minister or the chairperson. I would refer him to 8.3 of your submission and page 7. There's no confusion about it. It's your own document that you sent here. So that must not be any confusion when we're here. I think the document that we received has got more detail, honorable members, not a presentation, because the presentation is based on the document, this thick document. It does indicate how you wish to achieve your strategic objectives. But there are a number of issues that I think we need to look at, particularly in terms of the restructuring of your Isibaya fund. The mandate that you get from the principal, and how the principal wants also to interact with the investment decisions. While they'll be here, we'll also interact with them, because I'm just asking myself, in terms of implementation and also oversight, who then gets held accountable for certain decisions moving forward. It's not just in this area. I think when you look into the government pension fund or government pension act, the issue of the administration of the fund itself, not the investment side of it, Deputy Minister, we may need to look into that part also. Now, in terms of your developmental, which is driven by the social component, at some point, really, you know, we are politicians. We don't theorize. We want to, you said property is tangible. You can see it. People can relate with it. I come from a rural village, Warakobutrokwa. You know, everything that is nice,
we say, you know, why don't let's talk about this thing? You know, when we're in Santin, we say, go talk about. Now, precisely because of that, the issue of the gap in the housing market, because I remember very well when the PEGF launched this social aspect in Cape Town, it's about 3 or 4 years ago. It created a lot of hype and a lot of hope at the same time. As much as you don't actually get involved in projects themselves, you find, would want to visit some of this. Let's say an impact, you know, what villager have we invested in? Because it's one thing to say 60% will go to here, but we don't see, you know, exactly where. It will be important for us to, we can come to your offices, sit with you, give us strategic plans at the end of the day. You are not FSB, that tells us about regulations. You manage an asset of the employee, so you must see tangible results on the ground. So that gap still needs to be looked into. Now, in terms of, again, the agricultural sector, you know, policies are as good as they are known by those who seek to use them. The question is, to what extent is the information filtering for those who are looking for this kind of assistance? The FSB has to deal with the awareness of consumer products and all these things. But I think in terms of the new regulations, the service provider or the one that wants to sell the product has got the responsibility to educate the consumers about it. Now, we have got a you see, I'm raising this thing, Deputy Minister. We had to undertake a review on DFIs, precisely because individuals in those DFIs, Kula and Zika and all that, they were more profiled as persons. City Press, Sunday Times, you see this face of a CEO. But people never knew what this institution is all about except to know the CEO. And the next thing he has moved to another big appointment because the institution profiled him. I think what people should be knowing or people should be getting is the services and the products that are available for them. So that component within the PIC, communication and whatever should actually assist. Because, you know, when you move into the rural areas and townships about property investment, shopping malls, retail, our people should know that there's an opportunity for them to participate in there. Otherwise, you'll find a comic with all other people. And the small enterprises that were actually emerging in the township that they survived for the last 50 years, they die. And we can't be happy that we've done an empowerment as PIC in Atteridgeville or Sourceville, when none of the people in that area can relate tangibly with that particular development. Of course, provision of retail space and all those kind of things is one thing, but it will be another thing if you find people cannot even afford the rental of those issues. So I'm just saying the strategy should begin to talk to how best can it relate to the issues of unemployment and issues of inequality and so on and so forth. Let me talk about Africa's strategy. Yesterday we had a discussion with the South African Banking Association, almost all the CEOs of the banks from the ruling party side, in terms of our policy discussion documents.
they raised a very important point. That as we move into Africa, the problem is going to be the fragmentation in which you get in. Last week, Ecobank was making a presentation in Ghana in one very important forum. And First Bank from Nigeria was also there. Now, I was sitting there just listening and said, these people are moving on. They're not waiting for us. You go to Abuja, the Chinese are there. Now, we might be saying we need to get into Africa and thinking that Africa is waiting for us. When in actual fact, BRICS family is already there without us. But the point that the private sector was raising yesterday was to say, we need to have a collective approach. DBSA, all the development finance institutions, including yourselves. Because when Brazil goes in there, they go in with a package. It's a country led by the president to say, this is what we're going to do. Now, Nedbank can go in there with his balance sheet. It looks big in terms of South African standards. But when you go in there, and you are facing China, that bank, that balance sheet that we have is nothing. It would do nothing about it. So I think it is important that we find a way to. But I think the ministry should actually try to champion that collaboration. I think let me pause here. Over and above, I think the vision that we have, the strategy that you have elaborated to us, we might not be at one with yourselves at the moment, but I think the vision is very, very proper. It begins to reposition ourselves in terms of the responsibilities and the challenges that faces us as a country and the continent. I must also say, as you have been congratulated, it is unfair that the last time we came to see you, you did not have a chief operations officer. It reminds me of another organization that once appointed somebody, but it went with its own gathering. It had no, it had no courage to announce that person. Now, you can't bring the chief operations officer here. She has simply said a word, a maiden speech, and is the only she. No. I'm taking it from the other she. Okay. Now, I'm just saying we also need to welcome and congratulate you. We will be there behind you to support you in this collective of male-dominated executives. Yeah. I think on that score, we appreciate the Deputy Minister that you have been here. We've taken a little bit of time. I think we'll continue to interact. We are going to go back into this document as the committee, and there will be a number of issues that will come back to you to raise, not to wait for you to come and make a presentation. We'll have to do that. On the issue of corporate governance and structure, I don't think we must be technical about it. You know, perception, once it remains unattended to, becomes reality. We can say, you know, 5 years as commissioners, now 6 years as, after corporatization. The fact of the matter is the same institution, same faces. Now, in your document here, you are saying some of these investment committees, in terms of sectoral approach, will be led by non-executive director, chaired by non-executive directors. Conflict of interest, you don't have to research it. You see it. Now, this is one institution that cannot afford to have a reputation that can discredit itself. You've gone through all sorts of things. I think you are actually beginning to emerge and clean the institution. So it will be important that that reputation is actually maintained, so that there are no doubts about the things that you do in that institution. Very, very important. So I thought I should just make these remarks. And thank you once again, Deputy Minister, CEO,
Chief Operations Officer Wong Yan. We're not saying you should retire and have garden leave. You know, the experience and the wealth of information you have can be utilized in different forms. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Chair. And we take all the points you made at the end, and we hope when next we engage, as we indicated, that the issue of the development strategy and the Africa strategy were matters that were still being worked on when the corporate plan was finalized. So we look forward to further engagement on that and looking into the issues that you raised. And also, I think it's something that we should also work on. The tradition of congratulating people in the PRC has actually died. And thanks for your reminders, both to Mr. Tim Harris and yourself, for reminding us that when people get appointed to these positions, we should not take it as, it's not. And once again, congratulations to our COO for her appointment. She's also been in the position for too long for me, and maybe that is why we forgot to do that. But our apologies both to yourself and to Petra. And the CFO as well, this is her first appearance to the committee.
Yes.
As you said, there is only one she, and the corporate secretary is a she. So we have... Yeah, we're doing very well in that space, Chairperson. But thank you very much. Indeed.